My name's Eddie, I'm an addict. Is this like CA's version of Glastonbury? Yeah, it's sort of... Do you know, I've got this song keeps going around in my head. I don't know if anyone remembers Sorted for Ease and Whiz by Pulp, right? But I've just had that going around my head all day, and I never got a Glastonbury because I'm a proper cocaine addict, and I was always going places, but I never, ever got there. My world was very, very small. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't travel distances, so it's nice to be here. I'm a bit overwhelmed, to be honest with you. Tony sort of did what Tony does and just phoned me up and said, do you mind doing a small share at a little event we got? And as I was coming up the drive, I thought, oh, my God, I was not prepared for this. But as a couple of people have described who have gone before me, I'm just going to try and, you know, share my experience, my strength and hope. And I don't know if this has got anything to do with me being a cocaine addict. I don't believe it has, but, you know, one of the things I wanted to describe was from a very, very young age, I remember being bewildered with life, right? Completely bewildered from as long as I can remember. And, like, deeply unsatisfied with everything. I think, you know, one of the main features for me was I didn't like my parents. I preferred Warren North's parents down the road, do you know what I mean? And I was a bit ungrateful, do you know what I mean? Like, you buy me the Commodore 64 and I wanted the Commodore 128 or whatever it was, and, you know, that bike weren't enough. And nothing was ever enough for me. And it weren't because I was a bad kid and stuff, but I had this internal condition going on. And, I was just... You know, I think generally I describe myself as a bit bewildered, and something I definitely acknowledge today when I look back at that young kid was I really didn't love myself. I didn't know how to love myself, and I was riddled with fear, like absolutely riddled with fear, and I just didn't feel like I was enough. And I guess, you know, all of that stuff, and I think I'll kind of bundle it together. I was very, very sensitive. I craved a lot of attention. And I kind of started developing these, I don't know, manipulative skill sets is how I'd describe it. And I think ultimately, looking back, I started cultivating a false version of myself from a very, very young age, right? And my coping mechanism for all of that stuff was to be, you know, the class clown or the guy who tried anything, or I was just craving people's attention. And I think, you know, I was a drug addict in the making, that's for sure, right? And I just want to say that, you know, I identify so strongly with Bill's story. And one of the bits I identify with it is, like, you know, when he references that bit in Winchester Cathedral, right? And he's acknowledging that his spirit and his connection with God was always there. I had a very religious upbringing, right? And, you know, I wasn't ignorant to what I was doing was, you know, fundamentally not right. But yeah, I was vulnerable. I was a follower. And ultimately, I was absolutely without defence from the first drug I was ever offered. And do you know what? I can remember it vividly. Some kids were selling trips and, you know, they were kind of distributing them. And someone said to me, have you ever had one of these before? I went, yeah, of course I have. Give me two of them. Right? And the next thing I know, I've had two trips. And there was literally no consideration of the consequences. I was just trying to impress people. And do you know what? Like, the reality is like, I didn't necessarily enjoy the experience. I definitely didn't enjoy the experience of walking into my sister's, I think it was about her eighth birthday party, and coming up on a fucking trip. And, you know, it wasn't a great experience, but guess what I did the next night? I took another trip. Like, that's me. That's my experience of drugs, you know. And, yeah, that sort of period of my life, you know, that you'd consider recreational drug taking. Yeah, you know, do you know what? There were periods where it worked to a certain extent. And I, you know, particularly, I'm conscious there's kids here. I don't want to sort of advertise it, but, you know, when I was taking things like ease and out partying, and it sort of felt like it worked for a while. But then cocaine came along. And I'm what I would describe as a proper cocaine addict. And I'm not into social commentary and stuff, but what is it with cocaine, right? Like, even today, and I've got two young kids, I am baffled by the way that cocaine is represented in society. Like, you know, all these documentaries about drug dealers and fucking Pablo and fucking this guy and that guy, and it's almost glamorized. And that was my experience of cocaine. This drug came along, and there's this young man who, you know, lacks confidence, lacks self-respect, scared of his shadow. And there's this drug that's presented to me that apparently solves all of that, you know, and it builds your confidence and it makes you fearless and it makes you popular. And I was sold. Like, literally, I'll never forget the first time I took cocaine, a geezer said to me, "Have you ever tried this before?" I went, "Yeah, of course I have, mate." And he stuck a line of gear down and I sniffed it. And 10 minutes later, I said, "That don't work. Give me another one." And the next thing, I sniffed all his gear. And I was walking around saying, "That stuff's no good. It don't work." And then the next day, I was phoning him up saying, "Have you got any of that stuff, mate?" You know, and do you know what? I don't want to talk, you know, it's not like EastEnders. I don't want to go on about an episode of my life, right? But the reality is like, my cocaine using took me into an environment that, yeah, it encouraged my full self, you know. And my full self is like, I'm full of fear, but nobody can know that, right? So I walk around trying to act like an odd man, even though I've never had a fight in my life and I'm about 10 stone, right? I tell people I'm rich when I'm skint. You know, I tell people I'm honest. I'm a fucking habitual liar. I tell people I go to work and, you know, and I don't. And I was in an environment that, yeah, listen, to sum it all up, I was in an environment and I was in a place where there was no truth. And do you know what? I had this kind of lurking notion that this wasn't the version of my life that I wanted. And I had this lurking notion that this wasn't the future I wanted. So, but do you know what? The problem was that lurking notion existed for about 10 years, right? For about 10 years, I was trying to stop taking cocaine. I was trying to be a better person and trying to be the person I wanted to be. And, yeah, I just couldn't fulfill it. So, you know, I am the real addict. And I think if there's any new people around, I suffer from that twofold illness. You know, for me, the physical craving and you know, the reality of my using is, and particularly sort of, well, not towards the end of my using, like, the physical aspect of my drug addiction, I want to be brutally honest here, physically, cocaine does fuck all for me. Excuse my language, sorry. It does nothing for me, right? In fact, for me, the best bit about cocaine is the buzz I get when I'm waiting for it. Like, you know, my reality of cocaine use is it does nothing for me physically, but the minute I have one, that is it. All bets are off. But, you know, the mental obsession for me, like, genuinely, I am, my experience of drug using is that every day I would somehow manage to resource cocaine, and I was stopping. Like, every day was a stopping day. And for many, many years, it was like that. And, you know, I desperately wanted to stop, but I couldn't, right? And that mental obsession of, like, you're stopping, you're definitely stopping, and then the next day, I'm calling it on, even though, you know, my head's telling me that it's just going to be a livener this time. And, yeah, it's... that using against your will, it's the ultimate act of desperation. And it went on for years. And like the mental obsession bit, I remember my using was just so pathetic in the end that I'm stood in pubs with like 60-year-old blokes on Monday afternoons trying to recapture the glamorous days of, you know... the glamorous days that never really existed. So I got here, you know, I came to Cocaine Anonymous, and I don't believe in consequences these days. I had been trying to stop. I'd been to doctors, I'd been to psychiatrists, and I got here, you know. And I kind of want to talk about recovery. So Cocaine Anonymous was just so appealing to me. Years and years of trying to stop, and for the first time, I heard people accurately describe the problem that I'd been trying to identify. You know, and do you know what? It was the first place I got to where people understood my problem, and if I'm brutally honest, they were willing to listen to me talk about my shit and my pain. And people were kind and people were loving. But most importantly, I remember that first meeting I was in, and my first sponsor is here. And I vividly remember identifying that they had a solution for the problem that I suffered from. And, you know, I remember him, and I was with him earlier, and he just said, "Are you broken?" And I was just defeated. He was like, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And I was willing to do anything. Genuinely, I would have done anything right there. And, I had that gift of desperation that we talked about, and I knew the stakes were high. And do you know what? Like, I just threw myself into it. I was at his house 7 o'clock the next morning, ready to get into the book. And thank God for strong sponsorship, because, you know, whilst he was willing to listen to my pain and my suffering, he was far more interested in navigating me to the solution. And, you know, the solution is God. And do you know what? Like, in those early days, you know, I'm so grateful. My experience is that my God carried me. And my current sponsor says something. He says, like, believing in God doesn't demand a lot of us. And I'm really pleased that, you know, my God was loving and he was understanding. All I need is a broken and contrite spirit, and that's what I had. And God was there to rescue me. I had that profound spiritual experience that we describe, that's described in the book. And I've had many, many others along the way. And I just threw myself into it. And just a couple of observations on it, you know. I remember my step four, and I came here and everyone else was to blame. You know, the reality is like, for me to keep using the way I used and to cause the pain and the destruction I needed people to blame. It was my wife, it was my in-laws, it was bosses. And to have that experience where I get to see the truth about myself was life-changing. So, yeah, you know, I look back on that first round of amends, and I was willing to say sorry to everyone. And early in recovery, I think that's really important. But, you know, my recovery has really evolved. I wanted to say that. And just to share some of my experience, I think I don't have any regrets, but we've been reading The Family Afterwards a lot recently. And I think some of the things I wish I'd have done is I wish I'd have brought my family more into my recovery. I think I'm potentially guilty of having separated the two things, which is a bit of a contradiction, actually, because, you know, if we think about good recovery and we think about God and we think about the damage that we've caused, one of the things I wish I'd have done is brought God and recovery more into the family. You know, I threw myself into meetings, I threw myself into working with others, and I think that's a bit of a lesson learned. I'm not one of those, well, I'm not judging anyone, but the story of my recovery is I didn't go and get a like job for 25 grand, right? I have really thrown myself into life. And the guy who introduced me, you know, he's been quite influential in that recently, where, you know, I believe recovery is about throwing yourself into life. You know, it says on page 87, it talks about we're going to make, you know, absurd decisions. You know, we're going to take risks. And that's what I've done in recovery. I'm having an amazing experience. But what I've realised, and what my experience was, that the longer my recovery has gone on, and, you know, the less of a newcomer I am, the more... I had an experience about 18 months ago where I was broken again. And on reflection, I started treating recovery like a... like something that I just do on a daily basis, and I wasn't connected to it. I guess I was distanced from God, right? And what I've been really doing in the last 18 months, and part of the group that Dan referenced, is turning back to God, is how I describe it. And what I'd realised is I was taking my own inventory. I was playing God's role in my life. And what's been pretty profound is doing some work around that and really looking at the mystery of God and the mystery of recovery. And by the way, I'm not religious, but that spiritual experience I had 13 years ago, and I've had lots of spiritual experiences along the way, but it ain't going to sustain me, right? So been working a lot and looking a lot at what is the mystery of God and what is the mystery of God in recovery and in my life and in the relationships that I have. And I guess I've had a new spiritual experience because today I'm deeply connected. You know, I'm very deeply connected. And I'd suggest that in the last 18 months, I've probably faced some of the biggest challenges I have in my whole life, let alone in my recovery. And this program and this fellowship and the relationship of being sponsored and working with others and actually having relationships with people that are really, really mature in recovery have kind of protected me and nursed me through that. So I guess my message, and I'll finish off on this, is that the experience we have early in recovery is great, you know. And do you know what? That gift of desperation and that willingness to do anything is so, so important. And like the previous person shared, you just got to throw yourself into that and grab hold of it. But as recovery goes on and life becomes bigger, and do you know what? My knowledge of recovery increases. I still got to keep close to God in that. Yeah, and this stuff is subtle, and it's just one other thing I want to share that I don't want to forget, right? Like, years and years of just doing inventory on a daily basis and being able to identify my defects, you know, they don't necessarily help me grow as a person. And there's a lady here who shared back to me quite a while ago about understanding what my assets are and understanding about the positive things in my life. So trying to focus on that has been a major part of my recent recovery. And yeah, I'm trying to understand more what the mystery is. And actually, it's probably less about understanding and more about experiencing God in my life. And thanks for having me. It's been an absolute honour to be here. And thanks for everyone who's come along. Cheers.